Relive the moments that were etched in history. This is Radio Islam International. The world is our community.
11 minutes past 8 Central African time. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and welcome to Under the Radar here on Radio Islam International. My name is Ibrahim Musa, and it's your weekly dose of current affairs as well as analysis, taking you all the way until 10 p.m. this evening. We're starting locally here in South Africa on the show this evening, and we talk about a very, very important barometer, I guess, of the state of the country, and that is the health of municipalities in our nation. And referring to an article posted recently by Jordan Griffiths, who highlighted the decline in fall, the fact that one in five municipalities in our country is in a state of collapse. And in a briefing to Parliament in July, the Deputy Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs Minister, Park Stau, indicated that there were 46 municipalities countrywide where provincial governments had been required to intervene because of bad governance and a collapse of services. And this was in terms of Section 139. Out of these 46, many of them were in the Northwest as well as KwaZulu-Natal. We're joined on the line now by Jordan Griffiths himself. He was an elected DA City Councillor in the 2016 local government elections, thereafter moving on to the role of policy advisor in the mayor's office in the city of Swane, and he also served there under the Msaminga and Mokgalapa administrations. Jordan, great speaking to you. Thank you so much for joining us this evening.
Good evening, Ibrahim. Thank you, and hello to all the listeners.
A pleasure speaking to you, Jordan. I'm sure the motivation for this, I mean, you write on a wide variety of policy issues as well as political developments here in South Africa, but I'm sure what might have been part of the motivation for putting pen to paper on this particular piece would have been the warning signs, or would have been personal observations that you've made in the space of local government.
Indeed, Abraham. I mean, I'm obviously a specialist in local government. It's kind of my field of expertise, and my working background for the last few years has been in that space, particularly in the metropolitan city, the city of Tore. So I keep up to date on the latest developments, the latest legislation that pertains to local government, and also particularly where the key areas of risk are in local government, and how we should try and respond to them before they compound and become increasingly worse and trigger instances where a Section 139 intervention is needed, such that administrators are deployed to a municipality and in some cases the council might even be dissolved due to sort of what's referred to in the Constitution as the failure to deliver on executive obligations, which indicates, you know, that critical services and deliverables within a local municipality have ceased to be delivered upon and are putting the residents at risk. So it is indeed a space that's close to my heart.
And I think a lot of what you describe here is, so familiar to many people that if somebody were to read your piece, I think all the pieces would kind of fall into place and people would understand at what level or what stage of the DK, perhaps particular areas or particular locations where they may be living in, is at. You talk about cases where streets start crumbling, there's nobody there to fix up potholes on streets, waste collection falters. We have parks where there's kind of grass overgrown, nobody to repair parks or maintain parks, illegal dumping thriving, water supplies, interruptions in electricity as well. Just take us through how does this happen, and I think that's a very important contribution that you make. It doesn't come all of a sudden. What are the stages that bring us to this point?
Sure, indeed, Ibrahim. And I think it's important to mention here that, you know, in the presentation to Parliament, the Deputy Minister Park Star indicated that, you know, over 40 municipalities have had Section 139 interventions placed on them. But in many cases, I suspect there are various municipalities that are in the exact same location, that are in the exact same position, and there is perhaps a political reluctance to place them under administration. So I suspect that the decline is far more than one in five, but obviously one has to work with the sort of official numbers that are given. But going back to your question, I mean, fundamentally, the science of decay start administratively within the actual bureaucracy in a local municipality. And one of the first areas is generally continuous declining levels of revenue collection. So any municipality that exists should be striving to obtain at least 90 to 95% revenue collection of the bills that it issued. So out of all of the bills that go to all of the different residents for water and electricity and property rates, they should be collecting at least 90% of that. And what gradually happens is the billing often goes is compromised. The billing process is compromised in a local municipality. Bills are either, they become incorrect, they become inflated, they aren't issued, and as a result of that, they aren't collected upon, or residents don't even pay. And ideally, when that happens, a municipality should have a robust credit control function in place. So an ability to then to charge interest on these outstanding amounts, to hand them over to collection agents, and to ensure that this money is collected. But what ends up happening is they generally continuously write down this debt. And they might write it down for political reasons, or they might write it down because they just are unable to collect it. And then what slowly triggers is as the revenues dry up, so the collection rate drops from 90 to maybe 85% to 80%, and then it gets into a danger zone because as you would be aware and as listeners would be aware, municipalities budget based on projected revenue. So, you know, a local government's budget runs from the 1st of July of each year for 12 months, and it's funded by what is projected to be collected in revenue. And as those projections aren't met, it means that various areas within the budget need to be plugged by other funds. So funds from critical services might be diverted to, for instance, pay salaries in 1 month. Or in the case of what often happens is the municipalities stop paying Eskom because they assume they can get away with not paying for electricity. So they'll be billing for Eskom. So a large revenue driver for local municipalities is that they act as middlemen for Eskom. So they receive electricity from Eskom, they distribute it out to their infrastructure, they bill residents. And what happens is they collect the funds that the residents who are paying pay towards their electricity, but they don't pass that money on to Eskom. And they do this for a sustained period, months, even years on end, until it reaches the point where their debt to Eskom is in the tens, hundreds of millions of rand. And then Eskom begins to load shed that municipality or even begins to seize their assets. And so that's one of the first warning signs. And I mean, there are, if you look at just the amount of municipalities that have outstanding debt with Eskom, it's far more than 40. There are many that are not managing their debt with Eskom. And Eskom now is becoming quite ruthless in its approach. In some cases, even repossessing vehicles from defaulting municipalities. But obviously, as that happens, you know, the money is also running out continuously. And so what they'll do is they'll cut on core operational areas. For instance, things like parks maintenance often goes first because it's aesthetic. It's not critical, like water infrastructure that needs to be maintained. So you cut on going to clean up parks and picking up litter, and so your parks become overgrown. So that starts manifesting. And then all of a sudden, waste collection isn't being collected as regularly because there's issues on that front, and waste starts piling up. And then illegal dumping takes off, and that becomes worse. And then the signs become very visible. So water leaks that should have been repaired within a space of 24 hours take weeks to repair. Electricity outages, which should take a day to repair, take days to repair. And road infrastructure gradually totally erodes and crumbles. Potholes turn into mass, you know, crevices in roads. And all of a sudden, the collapse becomes very, very visual to residents in these municipalities. So that critically is kind of what the signs of decay will gradually look like, step by step as it goes. And they can manifest in a different order, but generally it always starts with a failure to collect revenue and an inability to stabilize the billing. And what antagonizes that even more is that residents who are able to generally move out as fast as they can. So there's then a rush of people who are leaving these collapsing municipalities, taking their businesses, taking their skills, coming to maybe major metropolitans, which are generally better run, and setting up shop there. So then there's also this mass exodus of revenue, businesses closing down, et cetera. And it's a vicious cycle that triggers this systemic collapse.
It's indeed very stark, very dangerous, and a race to the bottom in the way that you describe it. I just want to take you back then, Jordan, to that first stage where you talk about the collapse in financial management, the collapse in billing. Just expand on that one for us. How does that occur?
So, I mean, one of the big issues, particularly in local municipalities, is a lack of critical skills. That is deployed in core departments. And this is particularly within the finance realm, within the revenue divisions, within the budgeting office, within the supply chain management divisions. And so either the individuals that are working in these departments are inept or they are corrupt. And so this also is part of what triggers it. So I can take you back to the municipalities, the VBS municipalities in Limpopo. I mean, in order for money to leave a municipality, it essentially must have approval from both the CFO and the city manager. The city manager, as the chief accounting officer, is the person who signs off on funds being paid out of the municipality. It's not the mayor or the politician. It is always the city manager who has this core administrative power and function. And generally what happens is, in many cases, individuals in these strategic roles are assigned there for political reasons, and not for their administrative strength. And so they focus more on trying to achieve or manage political relationships and less on ensuring that they build administrative robustness in the municipality. And the result of that is that core systems collapse. And as you have this happen, experienced officials, veteran officials, they also leave. And they either then choose careers in either better functioning municipalities or in the major metropolitans where the salary is also higher, and you have an exodus of skills in some of these core departments. And so all of a sudden, this decline sets in as administratively institutional knowledge is lost and very critical functions cease to exist. But the value of these functions is poorly understood. So for many cases, politicians and even city managers assume that what's happening here is on autopilot. It's always going to happen. And then one day they wake up and it hasn't happened. It hasn't been happening for months because they haven't had oversight on it. They haven't understood the importance of making sure that they stabilize and protect the revenue of a municipality. And then they put themselves into a position where they are making decisions that are detrimental to the lives of residents who live in that locality.
I mean, at a very basic level, would you say, Jordan, the way that this occurs is, down to matter of priorities, whereby those in control of municipalities, now get involved in political sideshows, get involved in, trying to keep positions, also in kind of petty corruption or whatever, may tick their boat on that side. But the mere fact of the responsibility of this municipality that comes through these functions is being forgotten.
You've nailed it, Ibrahim. That's exactly what happens. So there becomes this sort of a general disinterest in the core administrative function of municipalities, and the interest becomes definitively self-interest that drives many of the decisions that are being made. So whether it's corruption that's being facilitated through the awarding of tenders, or, for instance, I mean, investing in default banks like VBS, or just in many cases general incompetence and a lack of placing, as you correctly said, a prioritization on these core service deliverables, and an inability to understand that a KPI, as critical as revenue collection, when it is not achieved for sustained months, the repercussions of that are long-term collapse, and this value is very poorly understood. And in many cases, while the decline sets in around officials, there's an even inability to reflect that it is in fact their fault that this place has been run into the ground until finally, for instance, the provincial government intervenes and issues a Section 139 intervention, which often also doesn't even happen if there is a immense level of decline. There's a very great example in the municipality of Makana, which is the new Grahamstown kind of municipality in the Eastern Cape, for listeners who are trying to locate it. And in that municipality, the collapse was so systemic that residents' organizations went to the high court in the Eastern Cape, and they got a court ruling that ordered that a Section 139 intervention must be implemented, and the implementation must include the Section 139 1C approach, which includes the dissolution of council and the removal of the political leadership. And so the provincial government even appealed that decision, which is astounding, because the court made a damning finding, essentially highlighting how that entire municipality had systematically collapsed at every level. So that's what speaks to the point I mentioned earlier, where in some cases the provincial governments are even unwilling to act because there's political dynamics at play that they don't want to interfere with. And so they kind of just watch from the distance as local towns and rural districts just fall apart, and residents have to take matters into their own hand, which is deeply disturbing.
Now, put this in perspective for us, Jordan. When we talk about corruption or when we talk about the state of the nation, we obviously all very often look at the top. We look at the state of national government, or we look at scandals within national government, whether it is tenderpreneurship that is happening there, or whether it is state capture that is happening at that level. Which one should get more of our attention? Is it a case of either or? How does one contribute to the other? Municipal at this very basic building block level versus what we see happening right at the top.
I think fundamentally what you see is that the culture that occurs right at the top informs the culture that informs right at the bottom. So, a officials in a local municipality that has maybe 10 or 50,000 or 100,000 residents, they see what has happened nationally, and they see the sort of looting and instances of state capture, and they automatically assume, if it's happening there, perhaps we can get away with it here in our local municipality, which is quite disturbing. But I think importantly for the average person, it's important to understand that the local municipality is where you will see the direct impact of your taxpayers' money in many instances. A local municipality is responsible for your electricity supply, responsible for your water supply, responsible for the maintenance of the roads and stormwater drainage, responsible for your waste collection, for picking up litter, for cleaning the parks, for maintaining public swimming pools, for, in some cases, it could even be emergency services if it's a major metropolitan. But there are a wide array, traffic policing as well if it's a major metropolitan. But there are a wide array of services that are offered by local municipalities which people feel directly. And when those services collapse, your life becomes decidedly hard. At a national level, you may, for instance, be very critical of the South African Policing Service, et cetera. And so you'll withdraw. You may get private security. You may take various precautions. And you can kind of protect yourself against that governmental failure at the national level, if that makes sense. But in a local level, you can't. It's very important. It's very difficult to take yourself off the grid electricity-wise. That's expensive. It's virtually impossible to take yourself off the water grid. So you can't really not use the roads that feed into your house and feed around your town. So, if it were up to me, I would advise people to really invest themselves in understanding the mechanisms of local government and in scrutinizing the processes around local government, getting involved in a ward level with their ward councillors, or really making sure that they're tracking the IDP, the Integrated Development Plan of their local municipality, the budget, the levels of spending, what's being spent on, attending public meetings, interrogating their local politicians to make sure they're getting value. Because by the time the state of collapse sets in, it's often very difficult to turn around. And in many cases, the administrators who are deployed merely just replace the inept people that were there, but carry on in terms of the general level, in terms of maintaining the generals of incompetence that existed in the locality. So often the provincial government merely deploys more useless people to a local municipality, and there is no fundamental change in the management, which is deeply disheartening for people who had hoped that things would change.
Two final issues, Jordan. You obviously come from a particular political background, as I explained earlier. The piece singles out ANC municipalities. Is this what the facts speak about when it comes to administration? How are other party-run municipalities faring?
Yeah, so, I mean, the numbers are that all of the municipalities that have been placed under administration that are rural district-based are ANC-run municipalities. Currently, the only major one that has been placed under administration is the city of Tshwane, which currently already the High Court has ruled was done unlawfully. And, there's a Concord case that's been heard, and there's a waiting judgment on that, which may also be useful because it will provide a bit more clarity on exactly, when the provincial government is obligated to actually intervene. So on that front, it's quite interesting. But aside from the city of Tshwane, which was previously under control of the DA, every other municipality that's being placed under administration is an ANC municipality being placed under administration by the ANC provincial government. And in some provinces, it is far worse than others. So it is deeply, deeply problematic. And as I said earlier, there are many municipalities that require desperate intervention that are in a state of collapse. But because politically there are dynamics at play where either the politicians in those municipalities sit on regional or provincial ANC structures, there can often be a reluctance by the ANC provincial government to depose that government, if that makes sense. And so they kind of let the sort of decline set in over time. So it's deeply problematic. And in many cases, voters continue to vote in the same individuals each year. And this only merely, without realizing that the levels of decline are persisting. So perhaps in the areas that have, been placed under administration, there will be significant political change in the next local government election in about a year's time, and there'll be repercussions for the state of decline that's taken effect in many local municipalities around the country.
A last question for you. You kind of answered something that I wanted to focus on. How does one stop that rot, and what's the role of citizenry or active citizenry in that? And you gave indications in that regard, but as far as the role of a ward councillor, very often residents in a particular area would say that we are putting our grievances to the ward councillor, and the ward councillor just throws his hands up and passes the buck on to the municipality. And I recall having a previous discussion where somebody said that one of the most overrated positions is that of a ward councillor in terms of the actual power that a ward councillor holds. Does that ring true? What then can one do, or at the council level?
I obviously have a background as being I was a proportional city councillor, so not a ward councillor per se, but I'm very familiar with the role and what it entails. And critically, what is happening in many collapsing municipalities is that ward councillors are becoming complaints lines. So even administratively, municipalities what also collapses, as I indicated earlier, the water delivery, electricity, road infrastructure maintenance, this all slowly falls into decline. But what also collapses is the ability to complain to the municipality. The customer care centres don't function. The customer call lines aren't being answered. The customer care email lines aren't being answered. These processes now administratively also fail. So ward councillors become customer complaints centres themselves, and they merely act as sort of a conduit through which people express their rage at the collapse in the municipality. But you did correctly point out that in many cases, ward councillors are somewhat have their hands tied, because they get to exercise their political power generally once a month or once a quarter at the council meeting that takes place, which by and large approves the reports that have been generated by the administration, which have already been approved by the executive mayor. Now, in many of the municipalities in South Africa, they are governed by a majority. So 51%, a party has 51% of the seats in a local council. And so by and large, by the time the council meeting sits, ward councillors that may be in the opposition, while they will be able to raise concerns about spending and possibly go to the media to highlight areas of malfeasance or areas of negligence, they don't necessarily have the power to really directly hold to hold officials to account unless they are in fact in government. And this is part and parcel of what happens, because often political leadership, executive mayors, mayoral committees, have a vested interest in protecting the senior officials around them. And so it can be very frustrating for the average resident who just wants to make sure that potholes are being filled and that, you know, water repairs are taking place. And they're communicating this to the ward council, and the ward council is merely communicating this back to the administration, which in itself is unresponsive. And it creates a vicious circle of distrust where people lose faith in the administration, lose faith in their ward councillor, and lose faith in the entire democratic process. And what we need to correct this is obviously a better distribution of ward councils across different political parties, so that one party is not able to dominate local government. And there is this level of accountability and scrutiny that can be applied, such that, you know, there's more power that is distributed and divested across municipalities.
Just speaking to you this evening, some very common adages come to mind, Jordan, you know, like a stitch in time saves nine, or just going back to basics. They might sound like cliches, but this is essentially what this discussion is all about. Very important discussion. I thank you so much for highlighting it and for joining us this evening to take us through it in such a methodical way. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Ibrahim. I'm very glad I could contribute.